Penguin Random House Audio presents Just Another Love Song by Carrie Winfrey. Read for you by Justice Boulding. For Catherine Stoner, the honey to my Sandy. Chapter 1. I've imagined running into Hank Tillman roughly 1 million times since I last saw him years ago. Maybe he'd see me walking my Great Dane Toby down Main Street, my hair blowing in the wind in a casual yet gorgeous way, and he'd be rendered speechless by my beauty. Maybe he'd see me at work and be impressed that Sandy McIntosh had grown into a competent, successful, but most important, extremely sexy business owner. Or maybe he'd see me attempting to play basketball with my best friend Honey's 3 kids, and he'd be mesmerized by my athletic prowess and ease with children. Forget the fact that I can't make a basket to save my own damn life, and that Honey's 6-year-old Rosie makes fun of me every time we play because she's a bad sport. But never, in any of my wild imaginings, did I picture our reunion happening in the soda aisle of Tillman's Grocery, with me covered in dirt, my hair twisted into a messy lopsided bun, and the Santana Rob Thomas song Smooth playing softly through the grocery store speakers. "Hey, Sandy," he says casually, as if we see each other every day. In reality, the last time I saw his face in person was a lifetime ago, right after a kiss I wish I could forget. And what a face it was. And is. I allow my eyes a moment to roam over him, to take in the lines that weren't there 15 years ago, the crease of his forehead and the crinkles by his eyes, the way his nose is the slightest bit crooked because he broke it at football practice freshman year, those eyelashes that made me jealous because they were longer than any boy's really had to be, and mine were always so short and stubby. I have the desire to reach my hand out and touch his face, to run my fingers over the topography there and see what's changed. His eyes dart over my face like he's doing the same thing, and I look away quickly. I'm covered in dirt because, well, I've been in the dirt all day, installing a new garden for a client. I only ran to the store because my employee, Marsha, has a monstrous Diet Coke addiction and gets twitchy if I don't keep the mini fridge at the greenhouse stocked. I try not to wonder what he thinks of how I've changed. I don't exactly make myself easy to find. I use social media like anyone else, but mostly to keep up with everyone who moved out of Baileyville, or to like the constant stream of kid photos that Honey posts. I keep my personal updates minimal and focus on pictures of gardens and flowers. Scrolling through my feeds won't turn up a single selfie. But I've had plenty of opportunities to see Hank, of course. Album covers, a recording of Austin City Limits on PBS, a magazine article here and there. Because Hank Tillman became what he always said he'd be, a musician. I try not to look at that stuff because I try not to live in the past, try not to think about all the things I said I'd be back then, back when we were 17 and stupid, and so in love. "Hey, Hank," I almost whisper, willing myself to look anywhere but at him. I glance at the root beer and the orange soda, but I look back at him as he sticks his hands in his pockets. My eyes dart to his arms sticking out below the rolled up sleeves of his faded red flannel shirt. They're tanned and rough, like he's spent the entire summer, his entire life outside. I hate this, hate that he's somehow become even more handsome, and that I know all these details about him down in my bones, like they're a part of me, like I'll never be rid of him, no matter how hard I try. "He moved on," I remind myself. "He left town, and he left you, and you did just fine for yourself, didn't you? You own a business, you have a house. You have employees, and a dog, and a front porch, and a very expensive espresso machine." I know I should be an adult here, make polite conversation, ask him why he's back in town. But every cell of my body is screaming, "Get out of this store now!" I attempt to walk past him, but my bare arm brushes against his bare forearm, and I gasp. It's been so long since the last time I touched him. And it's pathetic, the way that simply grazing his skin brings me right back to being 17. The radio playing in his truck. The windows open and the breeze warm as we drove the winding back roads of Baileyville. The case of Diet Coke slips out of my hand and crashes onto my toes. Shit, I hiss as I bend down to pick it up.
Are you okay?
Hank asks, reaching out to help. But I just nod quickly. I'm fine, I say, pretending that it doesn't feel like one of my toes is on fire. I gotta go. I turn around, attempting to make my way to the cash register as quickly as I can. From now on, I will not enable Marsha's addiction. Trying to be a good boss only leads to injury and makes me run into my first love.
Sandy,
he says, and I turn around. Our eyes meet, and I see it all for a moment, a flash of everything we went through when we were just kids, passing notes in class, promising everything, kissing in his parents' barn, never dreaming that things would end up this way.
It's good to see you, he finishes.
I nod, not trusting myself to speak. Because what could I say? Well, it's not good to see you, Hank, because I like to pretend you don't exist. Instead, I hobble to the register. Marsha claps when I walk in the door holding the box of Diet Coke aloft.
Thank you so much, and oh my God, are you limping?
I think I broke my toe when I dropped this case of poison liquid on my foot, I say, handing it to her. I'll take over the register if you can go put this in the fridge.
My hero, she says, hugging the box.
You need help, I tell her.
And you need medical attention, she says, before heading to the break room.
I roll my eyes, then lean over the counter and take a look around me. The interior of my greenhouse, country colors, isn't huge. This room with the register is fully enclosed and full of garden tools, indoor plants, and lawn decorations. The front of the store is lined in garage-style doors that we pull open on summer days like today, letting the breeze blow through. But the double doors open into the greenhouse proper where we keep the plants. Not that we have any customers right now, because it's late July, and as the saying goes, the corn should have already been knee-high back on the 4th. There's still plenty of gardening to be done, of course, but people have their eyes on harvest, not putting new plants in the ground, so we're in a bit of a slow period until things pick up for the pumpkins and mums in September. This is mine, I remind myself. Country Colors was tiny when I started working here in college. I felt like I'd been left behind by the friends who'd gone away to school, while I stayed in place, attending Baileyville Community College. I dreamed of being an artist, but BCC didn't even have art classes. I majored in marketing, which my mom insisted was very creative and basically the same thing as painting. She's always known how to put a positive spin on things, my mom. When I hit my situational depression-induced rock bottom, it was Honey who encouraged me to start working at the greenhouse. Being outside and helping things grow would be good for me, she said. As usual, she was right. And the job grew, pun intended, into something so much more. Unlike marketing, gardening actually was creative. Planting things and watching them grow was rewarding in a way that little else in my life was. And more than that, it was surprising. Flowers, as it turned out, had minds of their own. Soon I was spending all my free time at the greenhouse, and when my boss retired, she asked me if I wanted to take over. And so Country Colors became mine. My sanctuary, my second home, my new dream. Did I still miss art? The feeling of paint under my fingernails? Sure, but now I had dirt under my fingernails. Maybe the dream hadn't changed so much as the medium did. And in the off-season, I spent
Sample complete. Ready to continue?